Thanks for all your messages and texts coming in so far this morning. We'll get to those over the course of the next hour. But first, we're looking forward to Highland Radio's DL Debate. And the man behind that, of course, is Brendan Devenny. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg. What's a crack, lad?
Very little. How are you keeping?
Good. Very best. Good weekend.
Yeah, a lot of action at the weekend, Brendan. Maybe we'll focus more on the Senior Football Championship, and you'll have much more time during your show to go through it all. But some interesting results. We'll just start going down it in what I have in my head here. Guidor Edgenet at Full Masters, 9-7. Even at half-time, Guidor found what they needed in the second half. What's your reaction to that result?
Yeah, I guess I was up with it, Greg. Obviously, my good lady's a Guidor woman, so one of her wee lads was decked out in the green and white yesterday. You've got to concede something, you know, in the family. But, listen, we were happy.
You've lost it, Brendan.
We of course ended up drawing them, but yeah, listen, 4-each at half time, we get a very tactical game, you know, not a lot of championship buzz in it, and you know, it's probably, you know, in those games it's job to be done, you know. Four Masters on the rise, obviously they beat Guidor in what was a bit of a shock in the first round game, but a bit like last season, Guidor regrouped and have gone through the championship, went to the county final last year, and now they're back in the semi-final. So for them, job done. Probably missed a few chances late on. Maybe they put the game away. Four Masters were kind of hitting them on the counter-attack, which, and Guidor were having more of the play, more of the attacks, which meant they had to be very, very efficient in front of goals. So listen, 9-7, I think it was a real job done for them, and they'll be happy to be in the semi-final.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the semi-finals and what way they might play in a moment. Kilcar 13-0, St Michael's 2-8, a real upset there. And what a comeback.
Yeah, huge shock. Listen, it looked, you know, and just like they say, you know, Highland Radio, Oisin and the team there, it's brilliant at the weekend. You know, the updates on the radio, and you click on the website and you have information, you have feedback from the games. It's brilliant to keep us all up to date. And that game, you know, you're listening in, and it's, you know, we're getting updates. Park was down to game, and it's game over, really. You know, a team with Kilcar's quality against St Michael's, and obviously the big talk about their main man, Michael Langan, missing him. So it would look like game over, you know, at half time for sure. And then the penalty miss, 37 minutes. It's 12-5 at that stage. You know, Paddy McBertie, who had a great game and was having a brilliant season, puts that away, Greg. And it's just, there's not a chance. But even missing that, you still think it's not a chance. So where they found the spirit to come through, and it was very interesting, the two big shocks at the weekend, Dunlow and St Michael's, both registered 2-8 to 13.
Yeah.
So it gives you a lot in that match. You know, you talk about goals and people know it, and I'm sure Kilcar and Glen Swally, they were huge favourites going on that, but especially Kilcar. So well done the St Michael's crew, you know,
what
it's going to set up as a new county final pair.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously you're all across these games, but is there anything we can learn from the upsets where goals were scored, that maybe did these teams, I don't know if you saw it, or did they try something different? Because I know you're going to use probably the word tactical for St Eunan's versus Neve Connell again, another probably boring, low-scoring game. Maybe I'm doing them a disservice, I don't know. 10-9, Guidor 9-7. But in the other two games, you know, they seem to be a bit more open.
Yeah, I think if you look at the teams in there, certainly, listen, Kilcar have a huge array of talent, and they like to put up big scores. You know, would they have been happy with 13 points? I don't think so. You know, Dunlow, haven't seen them the last few years, are really evolving as a team, and they do kick the ball as well. What's interesting about that is obviously St Michael's got the run on Kilcar, and that momentum switching them goals, you know, it was a really late winner from Michael McGinley as well. The penalty save from Mark McGinley, ex-Donegal, he's a top-class keeper. When I heard that penalty was saved, I wasn't surprised. He's a brilliant keeper. And the Dunlow game against Glen Swally, they got their two goals at the very start of the match, and that was kind of maybe the platform for them in the game. You know, as long as they didn't concede, then they were going to have a serious chance of winning that match. And Glen Swally still threw everything at them. So, listen, you would say that Sunday's game certainly was very tactical. Obviously, Neve Connell and Eunan's was always going to be tactical. You know, at half-time, Eunan's had a huge lead in that game, but Neve Connell reined them back in. So yeah, listen, I would say there was a lot more tactics to play maybe at the other two games, but certainly the spirit of St. Michael's and Dunlow, and as I was saying, it's, you know, people talk about the draw and seeding and different things. I mean, we have to encourage teams to have big seasons where they make a county final, and what that'll bring on for them, and could they win it, you know? But certainly to make the county final, for St. Michael's or Dunloe. What an occasion. Brilliant. And you think about what that does for the club and the young people involved and the encouragement. It's a massive occasion now.
There's something going on in Dunloe right across the association there, not just in the senior men's, but there seems to be great advances elsewhere. So on to the semis then. Is Guido versus St. Union's going to be a tactical stinker?
I have to sit the fence a wee bit in this one, Greg, you know. Due to involvements. Listen, I can't see it not being tactical. I mean, the game earlier in the park was very, very tactical. Let's put it like that, where Guido got the better Unions by a point. Now, it was probably a poor display from St. Union's perspective. So I think possibly the first half, you've probably seen the best of Unions on Saturday night. And then the second half, you know, lost away a small, but showed a tremendous amount of bottle to come back. Because when Niamh Connell get in the driving seat, Greg, it tended to be only one winner in Donegal this last number of years, you know, and they've been good at that stage of the game. So it was a serious bit of bottle for them to come down and do that. So it sets up an interesting one, Greg. Certainly, Guido beginning fancying their chances, and St. Union's the same. And I think the other semi-finals, well, equally, the four teams will all fancy their chances of getting into the final. So set up for great games.
Yeah, for sure. And it doesn't necessarily mean the outcome is a fait accompli. All of the teams in there can rely on performances in the last round and earlier on in the season to you know, with some sense of realism, hope that this is their year.
Yeah. But, you know, that's the thing about the last number of years. And people were saying about maybe the final last year wasn't the showpiece that everybody wanted in that. But, you know, you got to bring teams on. You know, it's not just that a team, you know, let's say a side makes a final. Even making a final can be so big. And if you look at St. Michael's and Dunloe now, how long has it been since they've been in a senior final? And that type of experience and exposure takes you on steps. So that's what we're trying to do, promote everybody. You know, for years there, the same teams were in the final every year, year in, year out. So it'll be great this year to kind of break that mould a bit and encourage all other teams that are just outside the ranking that, you know, you can
reach have your day eventually. Yeah, okay. Listen, there was so much other action over the weekend. You'll be joined by Parg Hilferty, Brendan Kilcoyne, John Gilday, Maureen O'Donnell. What else will be on the show that we haven't talked about that's important to mention?
Yeah, well, listen, we're at county final stage and semi, you know, the intermediate term in Neath Columba. A couple of great performances from the weekend from him. I seen the Neath Columba game at the park with Malin yesterday as well. Terman flying this season, you know, there's only been one thing in their mind, that's this title. So that sets up a fascinating final. Neath Patrick Muff and Karen Donagh. I've been tipping Karen Donagh at the start of the season. They won the junior there in the final. Neath Patrick, that's set for a brilliant shootout as well. That'll be a cracker. And I seen the ladies yesterday in the park as well. Mayville got the better of St. Union, so it's set up a Mayville Terman final and the ladies senior final as well. So we're discussing all those things tonight, Greg, trying to pack it all in because that wee hour goes quick.
And there's a lot. And as I say, you've great guests. Porrig is in with you, Brendan Kilcoyne, John Gilday and Maureen O'Donnell as well. The DL debate throws in just after the 7 o'clock news. Brendan, looking forward to it already. Thanks so much for your time.
Much appreciated.
Take care, Brendan. Take care. And by the way, that's live. You can watch it live as well on our social medias, the exact same way as you can this show. But it's a podcast, right? So very shortly after it's broadcast, you'll be able to listen back to it at your leisure. And I've used the word stinker in there. It was just trying to poke the bear, see if I could get a bit of reaction out of Brendan, but he didn't bite. Not as hard as I was hoping he would. Right, just in relation to our conversation with Breed earlier on, as it relates to the gentleman who, according to her, left the hospital at 1 a.m. having been discharged. Now, in fairness to the staff, they did say, look, you need a bus or a taxi or someone to pick you up, but he headed off anyway. This caller says, for clarification on the report of the man walking to Bridge End, he didn't get lifted by the guard E, who passed him three times walking on the dual carriageway. I lifted him as a private individual, as I recognised him on the road at Manor and went back for him. I was in the ED that night and my mother and saw that lady was talking about. I lifted him at 3:30 after he had been walking since 12:30 with just a t-shirt. I was more disappointed with the Gardaí than the hospital, says that listener. It's a unpleasant story, whichever way you look at it. No harm to that woman and her story, but I would have picked the man up, not left him in the cold. Surely any civil human being would do the same. It's the middle of the night, and this lady was on her own, and you have to make a call at that point, and I would not judge anyone on that. And the gentleman was lifted in the end. Another, as a nurse myself, I would never have let anyone leave the hospital without something sorted. I would have phoned a taxi and the hospital will pay for it. I feel this woman wasn't too worried. She didn't lift him, especially if she was nearly home. I would have lifted him or got someone to come with me. Another, the speed and on phones driving and even while walking on the road where no footpaths, too busy looking at the phones. It's a disgrace, says a listener who is attributing that public behaviour, presumably to safety on our roads. OK, we're going to be speaking to our next guest, John, after a short break. Good morning to you, John.
How's it going, Greg? How are you?
I'm all right. Now, you want to share an experience you had at the weekend. What happened?
Oh, well, I was on the train back from Portrush, stopped in Coleraine, and there was a lot of people there, a lot of activity. It was a very good day. There was people there from the Orange Order. There was people there with their burqas on. There was LBG community was on the train, and there was a wee street preacher. He was getting on with his wee plaques with his parables on it, you know, the scriptures from the Bible, and he was stopped getting on the train in case he would offend anybody. And just as a Christian, I thought, you know, is this the way the world's going now? That, you know, it was a very sad day for a Christian on my behalf to sit and watch this. You know, everybody else was left alone. Everybody was happy and happy-go-lucky. But as soon as the Christian preacher got on the train, he was asked to leave.
Now, obviously, it sounds like there was a diverse crew on the train. Is that just the way it always is, John, or was something happening in particular?
There was marching on in Derry, and there was, like, mostly people there from the Orange Order, and there seemed to be a lot of LGB. I don't know what was going on, but everybody was coming and going happily, freely, as you do, and nobody was bothered about anybody. But the staff in the Coleraine train station seemed to have a problem with letting this wee man on with his plaques, and he was just must have been going back home after a day of preaching, you know.
Yeah. We'll check with the train company to see what the policy is. But was there anything was there anything on the boards? Like, did it say?
Maybe scriptures. I wasn't too sure. Just maybe something about Jesus died for our sins and you know, stuff like that. It wasn't nothing really offensive.
LGBTQ plus is a sin or nothing like that. It was just scriptures from the Bible.
It was just like Psalms and stuff like that, you know.
Right.
But I wouldn't be a very religious man myself. But as I say, like it was kind of. He was singled out, you know. I say, it's kind of a thing now where the Christian in this country is a thing of the past. He doesn't really have any rights, or, you know.
Not that it matters particularly, John, but did you get the impression he was getting on the train to spread his message, or was he just getting on the train to go home?
I would say he was coming home from. Everybody was kind of on their way back, you know. That was near the end of the day, but. They weren't having him on the train at all. But everybody else, there was people there with burqas on. As I say, there was rainbow flags, there was orange men, there was all different people from all walks of life. But this preacher, this Christian preacher, he seemed to be singled out. And, you know, I just thought, you know, what is going on? Where's the Christians' rights now in this country? Is it over or for us? Or as Christians, do we just have to be quiet now? Are we segregated now and have to be quiet? You know?
It's an interesting question because let's say, for instance, you know, people got on with, you know, pro-LGBTQ plus signs maybe on the way back from a celebration or something. Would they have been refused access? Or if a member of the Muslim community was spreading the word of the Quran, would they have been refused access to the train? I mean, these are questions that you're asking yourself, of course, John.
Yeah. I just thought, there was nothing offensive. He was just carrying his boards, and you could see maybe one of them. And it was just, you know, Christ died for our sins, you know, that was what I could see on the board.
Right. Which is fine, if that's what people believe. I don't think there's anything offensive in that. That's someone expressing their religious belief. Did you notice or were you privy to any conversation? Like, could he have turned the boards whereby those messages were obscured and then accessed the train, I wonder?
Well, I suppose he could have. Like, but, you know, where's the freedom of speech now? Mm. And where, you know, where's
your
right
as a Christian?
You're
saying?
Like, you know, you're allowed to fly the rainbow flag. The orange men are allowed to wear their sessions, which, like everybody, there was nobody getting aggravated, or, you know, everybody was happy enough. It was happy-go-lucky, but it seems to be the staff in the train station, a few young girls that was on the desk, they had a problem with this man because he was just going about his business with his wee plaques and not annoying nobody.
Right, that was on Saturday. We'll make inquiries with the company responsible to see what code of conduct.
I was TransLink and Derry,
whatever he breached, they believe he breached. There's always two sides to everything, I suppose, John, and then the truth, if you know what I mean. But look,
but I just thought, you know, everybody else was free to go with their symbols and their flags, and that why was this man stopped, you know?
Okay,
is there a reason for it? Is it coming to an end for Christians in this country, is it? Or, you know?
Well, I think we only can truly have a shared inclusive... we can only have a shared inclusive society if it's fair to everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
there can't
exactly.
be some hierarchy of public expression of belief or sexuality, what have you. If it's going to be a fully... inclusive society, well, then it has to be inclusive to everybody. I think everyone would agree with that. But obviously, these policies, as we're hearing, or however they might have been interpreted, it doesn't feel like that. So let us look into it, John. I appreciate you sharing the story with us, and we'll see what TransLink have to say.
Thanks very much, Greg. Thank
All right, you. Cheers, John. Bye bye. I don't know what's your view on that. 086 60 25,000 our WhatsApp and text number. If you were on that train and maybe you're listening to us in Northern Ireland, 00353 86 60 25,000. A caller says, when I attend hospitals, I have to make my own way there and my own way back. They just want you out the door. It's not a babysitting service. I can't understand why this woman thinks the hospital have a responsibility to get him home. Where is his family? Well, not everybody has family. Not everybody has a support structure. Not everyone has money for a taxi. And not everyone has the confidence to travel independently like that either. I'm not saying any of those apply to this gentleman. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, obviously the staff didn't want him to leave. That was made clear by our listener, right? But at the end of the day, he ended up walking out of the hospital and then walking up the dual carriageway in just a T-shirt in the middle of the night, and it was quite chilly that night. So, hi, Greg. Your guest statistics on it being 33,000 times more likely to die in a hospital than a plane is misleading. If you're in a hospital, you're likely to be ill or injured, which... will more likely contribute to death rather than the treatment received. The reason for the ridiculously high budget set aside for the HSC for legal claims is the fact that it has a policy to defend cases even where the case is indefensible. This leads to years and years of legal action, delays and significant financial costs to the taxpayer and emotional costs to the victim, adding insult to injury. In the case of the cervical cancer cases, it was a disgusting tactic to delay proceedings where the HSC was clearly at fault, resulting in some of the victims not receiving the compensation they were entitled to. Their families should have, should they proceed, are likely to receive a lower rate of compensation due to the death of the victim. As injury and treatment costs result in higher compensation. The HSC legal section are aware of their liability before the case begins, yet insist on defending the indefensible. That policy needs to end. And a lot of people have issues with that. And often the case is frustrated and eventually settled just on the day, which causes great anxiety to the already injured party. While GBT is a great addition, it is only as good as the information out there. If the Wright brothers typed into ChatGPT, if it was possible to design an aeroplane, ChatGPT would advise it as a terrible idea for new innovative ideas. It has drawbacks. Of course, it's a tool to be used. That being said, genuinely, we are finding treatments for illnesses using artificial intelligence. It's having great inroads in certain areas, Parkinson's not least, as we heard last week. It is also self-learning and can make decisions and can be innovative. So this idea that, you know, it could never replace a human, we're right at the very early stages of it. And if you inputted how could the Wright brothers have improved their airplane design, it can go out into the internet and see where all the developments have taken place and improve that design for you. It could do that for you. But I do understand where you're coming from. But this idea that it can't create is a misnomer. It is incredibly, incredibly advanced. It's self-learning. And have a chat with it and you'll see. See, the part we have access to is just the tip of the iceberg. Morning, if they made the smokeless coal a euro or even 50 cents cheaper, people would buy that instead of smoky coal. Would that not make sense? Yeah, but some people don't like the smokeless coal. I know there's different variants of it, but, you know, it can take a while to get going. And also, it just really starts going when you're heading off to bed. But that being said, we have to consider people's health too. The smoking ban has been in Ireland for over 20 years. Have cancer cases actually come down now that people can't smoke inside? People go into the north to buy good coal, not smokeless. A lot of people don't think that smokeless coal has any heat. It's more expensive too, says a listener. Another, it's very hard to reach a target if the goal is always being pushed higher. That's why Ireland isn't on track for our climate target. A caller says, what about pollution from aircraft and all the space travel? Aircraft is about 3 or 4% of the global pollution. Which is, I'm not saying it's insignificant, but it's well down there, 3 or 4% and dropping. This caller says, this is typical now. Being a Christian in this country has been made very difficult. What about our beliefs? That's in relation to our conversation with John there. Good morning, Greg. Well done to the lady who spoke on your show about the man discharged from hospital and who had to walk home in the early hours of the morning. It is not safe to lift anyone along the road that you don't know. She did the right thing by ringing the guards. Thank you. What I might do is different to what that lady might do. And to be honest with you, in the middle of the night, not knowing the individual or, you know, I can really understand why that lady didn't pick him up. And I think most people can, but many of you can't. Greg, it's interesting that the EPA have pushed us all into using smokeless coal. My chimney cleaner has said to me now, every time he's cleaned my chimney, that the glue inside in the smokeless coal is causing a greater glue gunge on the sides of my chimney. Now I'm at a greater risk of a chimney fire. How does any of this make sense? Okay, listen, I know there's some great chimney cleaners out there. Is this one chimney cleaner? I was going to say chimney sweep. What is it? The 18th century. Is this one chimney cleaner's point of view? Or if you notice any difference in chimneys that you're cleaning in houses that predominantly use smokeless coal? Be really interested in that. They're talking about the air and pollution, but no word this past year is that is what's in the atmosphere. And it's not to do with the fall of the year either. All the different bushes and trees that are burnt on one side. What's causing that? And one thing, it's not turf or coal or fires. Unseasonable wind can cause that burning effect on the side of bushes and trees. I'm not sure if that's precisely what you're talking about, but anyway, that might be useful. All right, we're joined in studio by our next guest. He's Paul Darby from Stranorlar. Thanks very much for calling in to us, Paul. Good to have you in.
Thanks, Greg.
Right, you're an outdoor worker since day dot. I think you're like me. Left school early, did you?
16,
I was a wee bit earlier than you. Straight out working outdoors.
Yeah.
So that's just been your life. Did you ever do anything to protect your skin?
The odd time I would have been on sun cream, but looking back, no, I should have been a bit more careful and wearing hats. But no, a lot of time I didn't bother.
And the thing about skin cancer is it can be long-term exposure or short-term exposure. That's what we're told. So just the fact that you were out from 16, the way your makeup is, this is perhaps why you were vulnerable. But it's not always about long-term exposure. Now, you received a diagnosis of melanoma cancer last December. Yeah. So what led to that diagnosis?
It was April, actually.
Oh, right. I beg your pardon, sorry.
It was December. I noticed it, but I didn't know that was actually melanoma.
Yeah.
I thought it was a wee freckle, but it was just a freckle. It grew in a wee bit larger, a wee brown spot.
On your ear?
A few people started saying to me, like, what's that in your ear?
Yeah.
I didn't notice it, but I thought it was back boxing and got hit in the ear. And then I had friends said to me, and my girlfriend said to me, like, that's not normal. Like, you know, something shouldn't be growing, like, or changing colours. So I went to the doctor then. He was pretty sure, even looking at it, that it's not good, like.
And I mean, did you? That would never have been on your radar that possibly you could get a cancer diagnosis at your age.
No, I never thought it was. It's something I suppose no one ever thinks will happen to them, but just shows, like.
So, if it wasn't for friends or your girlfriend spotting this and sort of saying, "Look, at this is not just there's something going on here," we probably you could be still out there not knowing.
Yeah, but the thing is, I caught it just in time too, so it was just very lucky in one way. Like, it was, if it went in a deeper end, you know, like it was 0.8 mil. As soon as it had some mil, it goes into the the system.
Oh, wow.
And that's where it becomes aggressive. So I was very lucky, like, looking back now.
That is really important, isn't it? Yeah. Not to ignore things, but then.
As a typical man, like, I'd have been like, I'd be grand and just keep working away. And, you know, I kind of, I'm not good with doctors and stuff.
No, none of us are, really. Well, not many of us are, of course. But the doctor was pretty certain early on, wasn't it? He was, or she was.
The mole, the size of it, the colour, the pattern. You can tell he didn't want to say it to you, like, yeah, it's melanoma, because he can't confirm it. But he sent a picture to the plastic surgeon team and says, like, he's pretty sure, and get emergency appointment. So they looked at it, and within a week, I think I was down there, or 2 weeks, I got a phone call, and I was diagnosed with melanoma.
And they removed the mole then and do a biopsy. And what did that biopsy show?
It shows, like, you know, if it's an aggressive or what kind of melanoma it is. And it came up as an invasive melanoma. So they had to cover the ear, and when the biopsy came back, so a couple of weeks, and the ear covered, the hole wasn't, you know, filled in yet from the wire, skin graft, and they had to go back in for more. So it was wider than the margin they thought.
But how did you deal with that info?
I don't know. Looking back,
you got the bad news, but you also got good news kind of at the same time, didn't you?
I didn't, at the start. I didn't know how bad it was.
Right,
it's a wee bit stressful, I suppose.
Right, so I'm Paul, making this more difficult than it should be. I apologise for that. So really then, once you were told that it was invasive melanoma, but then they had to do further exploration.
Fire it spread. Okay, and it spread a wee bit further. It was just around the margin a bit more than what they cut out.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the worst thing is they couldn't tell you on the phone. So they ring you and say, look, you have to come back up. And that's the scary part, is like, right, how bad is it? They can't say, oh, it's in your whole system, or it's only a wee bit in your ear. So that was a bit, mentally wise, it was a bit.
How long was the gap between finding out that you had this melanoma and also being told that it's kind of contained?
The first time I got cut out, and they're able nearly to tell you because they do it every day. They're like, yeah, pretty certain. But I think it was 2 or 3 weeks. From that time, 2 weeks maybe, before I got back into the hospital again. So you're 2 weeks waiting, thinking, right, what's happening? And then I got a phone call just randomly. I was at work, actually. And they says, can you come in tomorrow? That's important. Like, and they won't tell you, but they did say we have to go back in for more. Wow. That's all you know. Like, you don't know how bad or what.
Yeah, but it just goes to show how good we are now at analysing the skin and the surroundings of the skin and them knowing what to do. Yeah. And the risk is that this could have gone into the bloodstream, presumably, and travelled to any organ in your body at this point.
As soon as it goes into the lymph nodes, I think it's very dangerous. Like, but as I say, mine's 0.8 mil deep. And then if it goes to a mil, that's where it starts. And it's an aggressive cancer, you know. Mm. So within like the course of, I think, a couple of weeks or a month, like, you could be...
Scary stuff.
Scary it was.
Indeed. And what was the procedure then? Because there's no obvious signs that you've had anything done to your ear, so...
They cut out, like, a hole out of my ear.
Yeah.
And they bandaged that up, so then when I went back for the to see if there's any
more... So you were like Evander Holyfield for a while,
Right. And...
little boxing reference there, by the way, since you mentioned boxing earlier.
Boxed my whole life and never had ears now, like this. But... they went back for more, so they had to take a skin graft from behind my other ear.
Wow.
To pull it over this ear, so I had 2 bandages for, like, I can't remember how long, maybe 6 weeks on my ears, like, and, you know, your ears bleeding
and
stuff.
Really patched you up well, didn't
it? It was a sore time now.
What happens now, just in terms of sort of the ongoing supervision? How regular are your checks now, Paul?
Every 3 months for 2 years, and then every year for the rest of my life. So you're getting checked.
Yeah.
They'll be watching visually wise, like they'll be checking any moles or anything like that. So.
And how are you dealing with that? Do you get anxious heading up to the sort of 3 month time frame, or you're saying, look, I'm in safe hands here and we'll deal with whatever comes?
No, I was you're kind of worrying, because once you have melanoma, it can keep, from what I've seen, I've got so many messages about people who've had it, or people have, family members have passed away from it. It seems to keep coming back. And a lot of people, like, once you kind of get diagnosed with it, and even if it's clear, you're more prone to it. So... that's a worry, because I feel like it's not the end of it. Like, you know, right now it's the end of it. But
that's,
I feel
a
like
whole part of the, you know, you're all clear that we try and talk a bit more about in this program, because it doesn't tell the full story, does it? It's not just you can crack on as if nothing's ever happened.
For the rest of your life now you're getting checked, but you have to be careful. Obviously, I was in Slough there last week. You still live a normal life. You just have to wear sun cream and hats and, you know, stuff you should be doing anyway. Like,
but that's your advice now, is it? What advice do they give you?
I would always been before, like, oh, if you get burnt, it's brilliant, because you go brown. You know, that's most of all people's.
But that's skin damage, isn't it?
That's skin damage. Yeah. Like, you know, you think it's
a tan is skin damage.
But that's how quick it can just go, like, at, you know, to melanoma. So, Wow. I'll advise sun cream and hats.
Yeah, and sunglasses as well.
You can still get tanned with sun cream, like, you know.
Yeah. It's just offering you protection, indeed. So why did you decide to speak publicly about this? I mean, the answer's obvious, right? But I just want to sort of hear it from you, Paul.
To help people, I suppose. I did do a lot of social media, like TikTok and stuff, and a lot, big following group. And I was like, most of my stuff before was to help people. You know, I've been through so many things in my life in general, like from foster care to different things, you know, and even speaking about men's mental health, I'll try and help, like. And I thought, you know, if I have that platform there, why not speak out on it and help people? So, and even Instagram, there's going to be following there, like, and the amount of messages, say, if I put it up, at least people are more cautious now and checking. Just to help
people. You know, and the truth as well, too, which I think is really important, Paul, is, I mean, obviously, listen, you've got a diverse following across your social medias, but you're also going to be speaking to guys around the same age as you, interested in the stuff that, you know, that may be a no harm to a skin specialist who could be 63 or something, and sometimes you don't hear the message. And as I say, that's no disrespect to them, or it's not an age issue. But I think if we get advice and encouragement from someone in our own sort of peer group, it lands a bit.
I think it's more when you know someone too, it hits home, because a lot of people said to me, like, you hear about it all the time, but it's only when you actually know the person, it's like, right, this could happen to you. Like, you hear all the time someone's got skin cancer, but it might, you know, it's no effect in your life because you hear about it when you know someone or you're friends with them or family. That's a bit more.
And it is interesting as our attitudes towards skin cancer, because skin cancer is the most frequent cancer in this country. Yet lots of us are guilty of, and you have been in the past, and me, as soon as the sun comes out,
straight out,
you want to go from blue to white, don't you? You know, you want to, and then from white to brown.
I know.
Yet we know it's incredibly dangerous.
We don't get much goodwill, so when we do get it, we're probably just, you know, if we had it all the time, we'd be a bit smarter. But,
and I think time is key. A lot of us, and I think this is particularly a male thing again, right, even once we've accepted, we might need to see the GP. We'll do anything in the world to avoid doing it, if the truth be told. But I think this is really important. It shows how important timing is. Yeah. There's not a big gap between 0.8 and 1 mil. Like.
No, there's definitely not. And even if it was 1 mil, like, you could be, you know, 3 weeks later, you could be, you know, dead, like, basically. Yeah. That's how aggressive it is. So it is scary when you sit back and think how things can be different. Like.
How did you find the treatment process? It seemed to have worked quite well and quite quickly for you once you got into the system.
Yeah, it was painful, like, don't get me wrong. And I think looking back, like, I just took it very good. Like, I dealt with it good, but looking back, then it's a bit of a shock when I went through all that there. You know, it kind of, when you're sitting back thinking about it. But the pain after it was anaesthetic wore off and all that crack, like, and painkillers.
Yeah.
Like, it was sore, and I was waking up every morning with blood running down my face. And,
wow.
You know, at the time, like, it was hard, like.
And I suppose, too, you know, yours was in the part of your body on your ear where, you know, people see it all the time. It's more recognisable. There's changes in it. But this can affect you anywhere, of course, any sun-exposed area or not. I mean, I've heard of stories where people got a freckle between their toes.
That's where they were telling me. They were saying, you need to watch your feet. I never, you'd never think that. Like.
No, I mean, and also, too, there's a big push a few years ago to map your moles.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Every now and again, and that's an easier way if something pops up or doesn't pop up, what have you. It's not a bad
As you get
move.
Older too, you see, like, you break out more wee moles and stuff like that. So, or if you're out in the sun, you'll see yourself. But it's just keeping an eye on them and making sure.
What's the story with your tats? Like, does that make observation more difficult, or
not really? No, you can still see them. I know probably from a distance there, but no, I would.
But
know
you know
more.
Your own skin.
Yeah, you know your own skin. Like, they are monitoring one, which is a bit. They were a bit iffy about it at the start on my back.
Yes,
and it's not raised out or anything. It's just the colour, like, and. They're monitoring it. They're watching at the very start, and then the last time I was up for my 3 month checkup, they took a picture and, like, they want to see now if it changes.
Right.
So that could be the next of it. Like, you could be getting that cut out, but hey, hopefully not.
No, fingers crossed.
They're just keeping safe.
They're being, at the bottom line is now, thank God, because of your regular checkups, they will spot anything just as soon as is
the end of it, hey,
is possible. And you talked a little bit about your other life experiences, and maybe that sort of, I don't know, toughened you up for this type of a journey, if that's the right way of describing it.
I would say so. Like, most people would probably take that a wee bit. Like, as my girlfriend said to me, like, you took it on the chin. Like, because I was complaining about a stomach bug one day. She was laughing, going, you literally just went through cancer and didn't even complain, which was funny. Like, and, you know, I think I do definitely think the stuff I've been through just have toughed me a wee bit, which can be good in one way and bad in another. Like.
Yeah, of course, on one hand, it's like, oh, here we go again, another thing to deal with, or... I'm equipped for that.
So that's what bulging makes you, like, as a person. So,
yeah, Cola says, hi, Greg. 3 years ago, I noticed a spot below my eye. Initially, I thought I'd been bitten by something. I ignored it, but it kept persisting and eventually started to bleed. I went to my GP at that point where I was informed it was a basal cell carcinoma. I went for a biopsy and had it removed. I was only 44 years old, so it was a bit of a shock. Consultant said it was sun damage from my youth. Thankfully, all is good now, but I cannot underestimate the use of sunscreen. I use mine daily, even when there's no visible sun. And that's what we're told too. And we're told that, you know, from an early age, we should be putting sunscreen on our children, for an example, even in the depths of winter, because there can be UV, damaging UV rays that they could be exposed to.
That's what they said. They said that the damage is done from not to 18. So if you have a child or whatever, like up to 18, if they got a bad burn when they're younger, that can come back later years. And even like it's dull day out there, you're meant to be wearing a factor 50, say moisturiser or whatever, like, but because UV rays, but you never think it, like,
no,
especially in Donegal.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. All right. Okay. Since you went public and with your social media platform and what have you, I'd say you've got a lot of stories back, Paul, you know, people chatting to you that, you know, feel they can chat to you because of what you've shared and what you've been through. Have you been surprised by them?
I've been scared more getting the messages from that. You know, you see stuff like, say, like someone's mother just got it and 2 weeks later they were dead and stuff like that. Like, it's crazy, like, the stuff that you see. And the one that scares me the most is a lot of people, and it seems to be a regular message I got whenever I put it up, was that they had the melanoma and they got it, same thing as me, all sorted, and then it keeps coming back.
Yeah.
So that there's a bit of a worry, like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So hopefully it'll not come back, like, but
you just
it's just something you see a lot in the messages, like, they must keep, they're more prone to it.
Yeah, but that's also, those people are probably more more inclined to message you and maybe are overrepresented, if you know what I mean, because they're, it's as I say, even on shows like this, if you're very motivated, you're more likely to text in than if you're not. Do you know what I mean? So I wouldn't say it's necessarily an indication of risk, but you're being well monitored anyway.
It's good to put it up and help people. Like, that's the main one. My videos were always silly and some of them are messing and just joking around, like, you know, always having a laugh. But then there's a serious side then, like, you always want to help people.
All right, so, Paul, listen, anything else you want to mention before we go? Because this is your story, this is your experience.
Just put on sun cream and don't be like me.
Yeah, exactly. And a message to outdoor workers too, because maybe, I don't know, the building sites or wherever you were working, well, certainly back when I was at it, if I whipped out the factor 50, you know, it'd be more than a long stand I'd been sent into the hardware store for.
It's more,
but I think things have changed now, haven't they?
Definitely, it's more normal. Like, I think it's, you know, people look at you if you didn't put it on, thinking, what are you doing? Like, excellent. So
great. Okay, well, listen, I'm glad you're in good form now. There's no reason why it shouldn't continue, but I do understand where the anxiety might come from, Paul, but you're in good shape and you're being well monitored, so hopefully you can enjoy your good health.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers. Good stuff. All right, that's Paul Darby there from Stranorlar, and that's his journey through a skin cancer diagnosis, and it's an ongoing one as well, as you heard from Paul in his own words there. Back with more shortly. Right, Robert Thornton's research manager with the Vincentian MESL Research Centre. Good morning to you. Thank you for your time today, Robert. I know you're busy. I appreciate it.
Michelle, thanks for having me on.
Right, now, the minimum wage, we're told, remains just over €2 below the living wage. And there's been some variance in that with other sort of, I suppose, environmental issues.
Yes, certainly. Yeah. So today we published the new figure for the living wage rate going into the latter part of 2024 and into 2025. It's come out to $14.75 per hour. So we've been producing this living wage figure, which is based on living costs and the cost of a minimum basket of goods and services for a single adult to live at a socially acceptable level. And we've been producing it for the last 11 years. And this is actually the first time in that 11 years that the rate has gone down. So it's gone down slightly by 5 cents an hour from 1480 to 1475 per hour. And what we found is that while living costs have continued to go up, and they've gone up by 1.7% in the last year for a working age single adult, that changes to tax and cost of living measures have helped to offset that. So the net income, the income after tax, has improved slightly compared to last year. And as a result, even though the costs have gone up, the salary required to meet those costs has gone down slightly. And that's why we find that 1475 now is the living wage figure.
And some of that, I presume, is going to be influenced by one-off measures. Is that a positive or problematic, I suppose, as you're trying to track a trend in this? Because, you know, what might be introduced this year the next government, whomever that might be, might not fulfill, you know, might not continue with some of these one-off measures next year.
Absolutely, yeah. So in our calculations, we the impact of the one, sorry, say the one-off measure such as the energy credit. So this year so far, there's been €150 electricity credits provided to every household. So that's €300. But if those weren't there, the rate we published today would have been 20 cents higher, $14.95 an hour. So as you say, if measures like that aren't continued next year, because it is proposed as a once-off and a temporary measure, then the living wage rate would be higher. Similarly, we see the impact of a renter's tax credit, which has reduced the potential living wage rate by 50 cents. So our figure would have been 15.25 today without that measure. But again, that's a time-limited measure, and currently it's only projected to go to the end of next year. So there is the potential for these measures to end, and then costs and the income needed to meet those costs to increase significantly again.
Yeah, and I think it's quite interesting that we're sort of seeing a tangible impact of some of these measures that are introduced, rather sort of what can feel often anecdotal. So it's interesting, and maybe the government useful for them, and they can take note. All that being said, there still remains a significant gap of over €2 between the living wage and the current national minimum wage. Now, that, of course, there are those on a minimum wage who are adults. That gap is much wider, inexplicably, to me anyway, Robert. I'm not asking you to comment on that unless you wish to. But there is still a €2 gap there.
Yeah. So the current minimum wage, as you say, for adult workers is $12.70 an hour. So it's $2.05 an hour below our new living wage figure. It is mooted to increase the minimum wage to $13.50, I believe, is the figure that's been suggested. But we won't know if the government implements that until the budget time next week. But even at that, it would still be a significant gap of $1.25 an hour. But really, the hourly figure mightn't sound so much. But over the course of a full-time week and a year, the gap would be significant.
Yeah, and no surprise either where the biggest increases came. You know, stuff that's quite to the fore of our minds, the likes of rent, education, interestingly, housing and car insurance still going up despite us being told it might be the reverse. But these are still real tangible increases.
Yeah, absolutely. So rent was the one we saw with the most significant increase. It was up 6.6%. So we in our calculations, we look at costs around the country and we calculate an average based on the proportion of people living in different parts of the country. But in that, the average rent we've calculated is a 6.6% increase, up €12.28 a week. It works out at about €910 a month now, the rent figure in our calculations. And food increased by 1.5%, which isn't that much in a single year, but cumulatively over the last number of years has added up to quite a significant increase in the food basket of up almost a quarter, or 23.6%. But then on the conversely, we did see decreases in other areas. So energy in particular has started to trend downwards. There was a 16% decrease in energy costs in our minimum basket in the last year. But once again, that is in the context of very significant increases in the years previous.
Mm-hmm. All right. All interesting. Thanks, Robert. I appreciate your time. Take care. Robert Thornton, Research Manager with the Vincentian MESL Research Centre. Just want to give a quick mention, by the way, to an exciting event running here through Highland Radio at the start of next February. It's the Cavan Country Getaway. It runs from the 3rd to the 6th of February. We're taking you, if you wish to go, to the wonderful Sleeve Russell Hotel. We're going to take you down in luxury transfers. You get a dinner each evening. You get bed and breakfast as well, and all your music. And what a lineup of musical entertainment there is. Jerry Guthrie's there, Robert Mazzell, David James, Michael English, Jack Kyo, Olivia Douglas, Sinead Black. And you are going to have the most wonderful experience. And places are available right now. It's $489 per person sharing. So if you want to break that down, hotel, entertainment, food, I think you recognise, whilst not insignificant, it does represent really good value for money. So if you want to reserve your seat You can do so. You don't really have to pay the total until around about mid-January. So if you want to secure this as a Christmas present now, and Christmas will not be long coming, trust, then you can give us a call on 07491 25000. If you want any further details, we can give them to you there. So it's just something for you to look forward to February. And for some of you, it'll sort out that nightmare of what to get on for Christmas. So give us a call here or go to our website. You can get more info there as well via... The outlet. Breach was back on with us as well. Breach earlier on was talking about her experience of, and I think she did a great thing in highlighting what goes on sometimes. But Breach, obviously some people saying, well, why didn't you pick him up yourself, Breach? Well, she got back in touch with us and she says, Greg, I didn't pick him up because I was on my own and about 100 yards from home and in severe pain from what I had attended ED for. If I'd picked him up, it would have been a greater danger to him and me driving much further down the road in the pain I was in. I called the Gardaí because I thought that was the right and responsible thing to do. Breach, you did the right thing. And you've done the right thing in highlighting it as well. So don't you be worried about that. Of course, other people might say otherwise, but you're on your own. You're just out of hospital yourself. And to be honest with you, you called the guards as well because of care for that gentleman. So certainly don't beat yourself up. I think you did the right thing in highlighting the issue. Just after reading in the Donegal News that the Donegal County Council is going to chop down a 19-year-old native oak on the Ballyrane Road so they can put up a bicycle pathway through the area. Encouraging people to ride bikes instead of getting in their cars is an environmental good thing to do, but chopping down a 90-year-old native oak, which takes the pollution from cars and turns it into oxygen so people can breathe easier and is simply good for your health, is not a good thing. Is not to be considered in the slightest by the council. Donegal County Council needs to bow its head in shame. Is there any intelligence or common sense left in the council? This is scandalous, believes Raymond. Well, I would love to get an explanation for all that, Caroline. Is that something we can chase up? I've read about it and we've discussed it, but I just wouldn't mind teasing out the logic of it and any alternatives that have perhaps been considered or rejected. Has there been a survey or public consultation with locals in the area? I know you might say it's just a tree, but you have one go at these things, and if you make the right wrong decision, it can't be reversed. Do you remember the big hoo-ha over a tree chopped down in England and people ended up in prison and everything over the head of it because it was so iconic? Okay, listen, thanks so much for keeping us informed and companyified. No such word, but there you go, this Monday morning. We're going to be back with you live tomorrow morning from 9. Looking forward to it already.